Your children ever really appreciated everything you did for them when they were growing up? How many of them took for granted that they had a home over, a house to live in, food to eat, clothes to wear, until they got older? I mean, there used to be a thing about my kids thought I was an idiot until they went to college, and all of a sudden I got really intelligent. Because they found out that I mean, we take everything for granted around us. And change is very slow, so we don't notice it. But if we don't understand the importance of all these things we talked about, if the world doesn't understand them, we will lose them. We see that in society today. I mean, those of us that are older, how many of us knew 40-year-olds that were living with their parents? Right? But the kids in that generation were never taught the same things we were taught, that were never kicked out of the house. You know, there's a comedian on America's Got Talent. He made a funny line. He said, "I live with my mother. That's not a problem. She's a hoarder, so she'll never throw me out." But, and unfortunately, that's true with a lot of parents today. You know, I used to hear when our kids were growing up, people would say, "Oh, it's going to be horrible. My kids are going to move out." And I said, "That's what I got. That was my plan." When I started out, the idea was they were going to move out. I didn't want them here. I had no plan to continue to support them for 20 or 30 years beyond when they graduated from college. But yet people take all of this stuff for granted. There's an interesting story in this book. Back in the 19th century, there was a British prominent atheist named Charles Bradlaugh. And he challenged a Christian man to a debate on the validity of the claims of Christianity. The Christian, who was Hugh Price Hughes, I always love the British, they seem to use the same name. he was an active soul winner working among the poor in the slums of London. Hughes had one condition for the debate. It's interesting because he said, he proposed they each bring some concrete evidence of the validity of their beliefs in the form of men and women who have been redeemed from lives of sin and shame by the influence of their teachings. Hughes promised to bring 100 and proposed that Bradlaugh bring the same. They discussed this, and Hughes relented and said, "Well, if you can't bring 100, bring 50. And he said, "If you couldn't bring 50, then bring 20. He finally got it down to one. He said, "You bring one, I'll bring 100. Bradlaugh withdrew. Atheism has never saved anybody from a life of poverty or crime or anything else. That was the point of that. Proverbs 14:1 says, "The fool has said in his heart, 'There is no God.' They are corrupt. They have done abominable works." And rather than acknowledge all the good things that we talked about that are the result of Christianity, because nobody wants to admit that, you know, hospitals and democratic governments and charity are the result of Christianity, they ignore all that. Have you ever heard somebody claim that more people have been killed in the name of Christ than for any other reason? Is that true? How many people in the last 2,000 years do you think historians claim have been killed in the name of Christ? Including the Crusades, the Inquisition, the misguided missionaries that came to the New World to convert the Indians, who killed a lot of people, but The best estimate anybody has come up with is 17 million. That's in 2,000 years. That's a lot of people. How many people has atheism killed in the last 100 years? Over 100? It's easily 130 to 170 million. And that's the one they've killed directly. That doesn't count the millions that were killed in World War II in combat and inadvertently bombed and killed that way. These are people like Hitler's death camps, Stalin's gulags, Mao Zedong. In fact, if you look at this, Hitler. How many people did he kill? Or caused to be killed? He didn't kill them himself. Well, we know there were 6 million Jews. Is that all he killed?
He killed his own. He killed people that didn't meet up to his expectations. You know, he weren't right-handed in a long life.
Right. Poles, Slavs, Gypsies. He killed. Handicapped. People with mental disorders. Right. Nine to 10 million people were killed that way. On top of the six. Okay. I mean, and where did Hitler come up with this idea that he needed to eliminate these people?
Darwin.
And who else? He was a great disciple of a 19th century philosopher. Friedrich Nietzsche. What's Nietzsche famous for? What statement is Nietzsche famous for? Does anybody know? He's the one that coined the phrase, God is dead. In fact, in one of his stories, he says, man ran through town looking under tables and everything, looking for God, and he said, God is dead, and we've killed him. The interesting thing about that was when I was in college, I had a little book on graffiti, and it was supposed to be humorous, and it had a lot of funny things in there, graffiti-wise. One of the funniest ones to me, and it wasn't probably them, was in Germany, at the time of the Second World War, somebody found in a restroom this graffiti written on the wall, and it said, God is dead, Nietzsche. And right underneath of it, somebody else had written, Nietzsche is dead, God. But Hitler's whole idea of the super race comes from Nietzsche, because he wrote the treatise God and or Man and Superman, and he proposed this idea that there was a super race. Well, that is a direct result of Darwin, because Darwin says we're evolving into a better race. If you're a Star Trekkie, like I've been at time, used to be. You know who Khan is, right? It was supposed to be the evolutionary achievement of selective breeding, whatever. And he was supposed to be a superhuman and super smart. The interesting thing about it is, as smart as he was, he couldn't beat this normal, common person called Captain Kirk. But the point was that, you know, Nietzsche gave Hitler this idea, and he liked it. And so he proposed it. Now, the Jews are a special part of this. Why do you think that is? Why have the Jews always been? Why has anti-Semitism always been something that's so relatively popular? That is, it seems to rear its head quite frequently in human history. What makes the Jews such a target? They're successful. But there were a lot of people who were successful. I mean, Hitler had tons of people around him who were successful in business in Germany. Germany was becoming very prosperous when Hitler finally took over. But what was it about the Jews' success that made them, or the Jews themselves, that made them such a target, even though they were successful? And they were, percentage-wise, probably more successful than most of the Gentiles. The biggest reason was they stood out. They were different. They separated themselves they made it easy for them. They separated themselves into ghettos. They weren't ghettos when they did it, but they separated themselves into communities. We find the same thing in racism today, right, in this country. I mean, it's easy for the white supremacists to pick on blacks. They stand out. It's pretty easy. I mean, we had years ago our neighbor. Her daughter was graduating from high school, and she graduated with one of many Sangean sons over at Montour. Now, at the time in Montour, I think there were maybe four black kids in the whole school. And she went to the graduation ceremony, and, of course, everybody's milling around, and she ran into Manny Sangean, and only Helen would have the nerve to say this kind of thing. But she was she asked him, and he said he was looking for his son. She said, yeah, I'm looking for my daughter, too. But you have an advantage. Yours is color-coded. If you've ever met Manny Sangean, he's about this high, and he weighed about 300 pounds. But, I mean, we have a tendency to want to pick on. We need boogeymen in our lives. Even Christians seem to want to do that. And it's easy to pick on somebody who is different, who looks different, who acts differently, who lives differently, you know. And so that's what made the Jews a target. They'd always been a target in Europe anyway. I mean, if you read Ivanhoe, even back in when they wrote Ivanhoe, they talk about the Jews and how they hated the Jews. Then we come to Stalin. How many people did Stalin kill?
Lots of his own people.
Almost all of his own people. It's estimated that he easily killed 40 million. Between fake trials, gulags, his forced transition, he actually starved a lot of people in Georgia, which was the breadbasket, but he wanted collectivization, and so he forced them off their farms. He treated them like, if you've ever seen anything on World War II with Hitler, how he jammed people into freight cars and hauled them for miles, he did that to his people. And he killed at least 40 million people doing it. In the name of communism. And by the way, I think that's an underestimate. I think he actually killed many, many more than that. But they didn't have HEPA rules back then, so they didn't have good records of how many people died. How about Mao? How many people do you think Mao killed or caused to be killed?
60.
Well, in his first series of purges from killed 24.7 million. Then from 1959 to 1962, he added another 25 million. Now those were all before I was old enough to understand, but this one I was alive for, and I saw it happening. And then he had this thing called the People's or the Proletariat Cultural Revolution. Another 22 million. Again, yeah, that's an estimate, but it's 80-some million people died. And again, it's not counting people who died that they couldn't track or for whatever reason, like the failure of communism in the first place, and people were starving to death inadvertently, because just like in North Korea right now, I mean, thousands of people die of starvation over there every year, and nobody seems to notice. Here's another one. This one is our era. Pol Pot, Cambodia. Anybody have any idea how many he killed? If you ever saw the movie The Killing Fields, it talks about this. Now, Cambodia was a country of only 7 million people. And Pol Pot, they claim, killed between 2 and 3 million of them, because he wanted a true pure communist agrarian society. And he was forcing people out of the cities, and those who wouldn't go, he killed. The point is, these are all atheists. You'll hear people try to say, well, Stalin was a Christian because he went to seminary. Well, it was the only school he could go to, and it was a hotbed of Marxist revolutionaries at the time anyway. And Hitler even made comments that once he got rid of the Jews, the Christians were the next in line. Right.
That's
right.
And even though he helped the troops and done all, you know, showed bravery in the face of the enemy and so on and so forth, you know, and this guy thought this was really religious, but he's like, and so he didn't see all the atrocities, didn't understand all the atrocities, but he understood when our officers disappeared because he ended up with a political leader.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I found in studying World War II about Stalin was Hitler came very close to conquering with the Operation Barbarossa and conquering Russia. Had he been bright enough to start it in the spring instead of later on in the year when he got trapped in the winter, he might have done it. Do you know why? Because Stalin killed off most of the upper army people because he didn't trust them. And so they didn't have any officers. Some of them came up through the ranks later, and there were a few, Zhukov and some others, that became heroes. I mean, there's always good soldiers out there that get passed over, even in our army. But had Hitler attacked them earlier, even with the same forces, he probably would have taken Moscow and Stalingrad, which were the two things that stopped him. Right.
Well, this is what this soldier said in his book. He said, when he went to Ukraine, they were much have you gone down to? And of course, the right answer was Stalin. And he said, we were surprised at this because we thought that was only our propaganda. He said, but that was not propaganda saying that. He said, actually, that's what white people felt. And he said, the war turned for them as German soldiers was when Stalin started making it a war about patriotism.
That's right.
Communism.
Right. That's why you'll hear, I mean, they were heroes of the motherland, not heroes of the Communist Party. They do.
But start out with initially that one, they didn't do that. So lots of people came over to the other side. And they said, people were cooperating with them and seeing these German soldiers as liberators.
Well, they would have, except that a lot of them were Slavs and Gypsies, and they weren't Aryans, so the Germans, at least the upper ranks, didn't.
He said he didn't know. He said we'd take the Russian prisoners and ship them back without letting them guard. He had no idea. We assumed they were going to treat as prisoners because they had never been slave labor.
Right.
We just assumed they'd be prisoners. They were so cooperative, we didn't have to put any guards on them.
Yeah. So there's an idea of how many, and I mean, that number I put up here for Christians, 17 million, was 2,000 years. Those numbers are less than a century. And that doesn't take into account the Japanese, who killed we don't know how many Chinese, because they hated the Chinese, or how many Koreans, because they basically hated the Koreans and the Manchurians. So they literally slaughtered millions of those. There's a book out there called The Rape of Nanking that shows what the Chinese did in one, or the Japanese did in one city when they conquered it. And they also, the Japanese also had the same ideas that Hitler had. I don't know what would have happened if the, you know, there was this story, I never watched it on television, The Man in the High Castle, which was an alternate history about, you know, if Germany and Japan had won and they split the United States and the western part was Japanese controlled and the eastern part was German. I mean, both of these had this master race idea about their races. I don't know what happens when those two butt heads. Never got to that point. I think Hitler saw them as a convenient ally at the time, same thing as the Italians, and the Japanese vice versa saw Hitler as, you know, they were going to take off some of the pressure that the West could put on Japan. And one person put down that in the 18th century the Bible was killed, in the 19th century God was killed, and then the 20th century man was killed. The technology that we developed, and this doesn't include what we killed in the atomic bomb attacks in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Or, like I said, it doesn't include the war dead. I mean, yeah, we killed millions of Japanese firebombing, if you've ever saw the cities that they lived in. The houses are made out of paper. So you drop, you know, incendiary bombs, it tends to start a big fire. Or the fires that we started in Dresden towards the end of the war, which killed, I think, over 250,000 people. That was war. And we made a lot of mistakes in war. We've done a lot of things that we probably shouldn't have done. But even Japan was given multiple opportunities to surrender. The horrendous firebombing in Japan didn't start till the last year when we had captured Saipan and had a base from which our B-29s could take off. And up until then, we didn't really have the ability to bomb Japan like that. But Japan had already lost the war. They knew it. But they were so fanatical that they weren't giving up. So what does it mean when it said in the 18th century the Bible was dead? What happened in the 18th century that destroyed faith in the Bible? Called the Enlightenment. Seems darker than Dark Ages to me because of what they found out, but the Enlightenment was what cast all this doubt on the Bible. It killed the faith in our faith, the human's faith in the Bible. In the 19th, what killed God? Happened in 1859. Right. Darwin published his book, The Origin of the Species, which basically eliminated the need for God, because, you know, God didn't create us. God didn't create the world. God didn't create anything. So why do we need God? There were four things that came out in this century. Origin of Species was one. Das Kapital and the Communist Manifesto were another. And Nietzsche's writings, where he says God is dead, all came out within a matter of, I think, about 20 years of each other. So basically, the smart people, I always hate that when they say that, but, you know, it's settled science, had proclaimed that, you know, we don't need God. God doesn't exist. Show me where God is. Then there was something happened in the 20th century that brought all of this together. Anybody have any idea what it might have been? No, eugenics was actually an outcome of it, but was an outcome of it. And this might surprise you, but it was a theory of relativity. Einstein's theory of relativity, which was proven and was finally proven, at least as much as ever proof of theory, in 1919 due to a solar eclipse, and they did some studies. To this day, there's probably only a handful of people can explain this thing. I mean, Einstein was phenomenal when he came up with it. But it was the theory of relativity that brought all this together. Do you know why? It was because people couldn't understand the theory of relativity, which has to do with astrophysics and physics itself. And that's really all it has to do with. It doesn't have to do with anything moral or humanist. But people couldn't understand it. But they liked the idea that things were relative. And so we started seeing relative ethics come into play. And the whole idea of relativity moving over into the arts and music and everything else. And so all of these things that people have been pushing around for years, this time about 70, 80 years, suddenly started to find a way to work, because they could say it's all relative. Everything's relative. I mean, we have relative morality now, right? And so what do we have? We have the world around us. No room for God. Oh, and by the way, one of the things that atheism has killed, or one of the groups that atheism has killed and is not included in there, is the literally billions of babies we've killed in abortion who never had the chance to live. and throw in probably another billion of deformed or handicapped that have been killed. I don't know whether you've read here in the last 4 or 5 months where Iceland was so proud of the fact that they got rid of Down syndrome babies.
Yeah.
Like, I won't be proud of that. I mean, I've known Down syndrome. In fact, our former pastor here, one of them had a Down syndrome, Jackson. Yeah. Most of them have been... Pardon?
They would just... If it was diagnosed that you had a Down syndrome, they would just abort the baby in that computer.
Right. We actually had a woman here who had that happen. I mean, she was tested, and they said, well, it's going to be Down syndrome, and we suggest you abort. She said no. And guess what? It wasn't Down syndrome. They were wrong. How many times have they been wrong about it? I mean, even probably, I would guess, 20-25% of the non-minority babies aborted in the United States are sex-related. In other words, they're pregnant, they want a little boy, and they said they're having a little girl. Well, that ultrasound is only about 70% right most of the time. And there's been more than once that I've had people, oh, you know, and then all of a sudden, surprise. Right. Oh, it's even worse in China. In China, they claim the imbalance is... I mean, in the United States, you know, our balance of men and women runs, I think, about 52% women to 48% men being born every year. In China, that ratio is like 60-40 the other way, or 70-40, because the Chinese, they're only allowed one child.
Now they're allowed
to, but so if they had a girl, they would kill it, throw it in the river, bury it in whatever, so they could have another child and just claim, oh, it was, you know, stillbirth or whatever. And in China, it has been a big problem. They don't have any women. Of course, it's communism, so there's no difference between men and women, right?
Well, they also have a problem because since families have only had one child for a really long time, you know, if you've ever had a parent get older, you know how hard it is on the family. You know, as you're trying to meet the parents' needs, they get older, they get more sick. The problem is there's only one kid.
That's right.
So it creates this.
Which kind of puts a lie to the whole communist idea that, you know, cradle to grave type stuff. Why is the kid stuck with taking care of the parents if communism's so great and is going to take care of you when you get old? But it doesn't. Never has. And never will. Yeah.
You're useless, you're dying.
That's right. In fact, they used to say that in the Hillary care that Hillary promoted in the 1990s, there was a clause in there that basically cut off your medical payments at a certain point. And the idea was, and this startled me when I heard it the first time, something like 70 or 80% of all of your medical bills happened in the last 6 months of your life. And so if you eliminate paying those ones, you save a bunch of money, which is actually the only way you can make socialized medicine work. What you see in Britain today, and it has been going on in Britain. I worked for a company that made pacemakers in the 1970s, and so we were quite aware of what was going on in the world with pacemakers. At that time, the average age of a pacemaker patient, and it's still true in the United States today, the average age for a pacemaker patient was 70. Well, let's face it, you know, your heart starts to give out usually when you're in your late 60s. There's an unusual earlier, but in the United States at the time, and we did this all the time, we used to have helicopters and taxis run in to get pacemakers out of our business and haul them off to hospitals or to airports, and because people would need a pacemaker and they'd get it within a day or two. You can still do that here. You down in the hospital and they say, oh, you need a pacemaker, you can have it within a week. Depending on how severe it is, you can have it within 24 hours. In England, had the same 70-year thing. The wait for a pacemaker was 11 years. What do you think the chance of somebody who needs a pacemaker lasting 11 years? England didn't install a lot of pacemakers. And we didn't do a lot of export to pacemakers. Interesting thing about that, too, this is kind of an aside. We made the only nuclear pacemaker in the world. We developed it. Arco Medical Products was a company. And this is where marketing fails you. A nuclear pacemaker, see, the standard pacemaker that you would get, the battery lasts about 10 years. And then you have to get the pacemaker. There's no way to change the battery, so you just take the pacemaker. It's just in a pocket here anyway. The nuclear pacemaker would last 50 years. Well, how many 70-year-olds are going to live 50 years and pay, because the nuclear one costs about 2.5 times what the battery-operated ones did. You know, how many people are going to live long enough to worry about a 50-year pacemaker or want to pay for it? It wasn't a big seller. I mean, I guess you could have sold it to a few 40-year-olds who had severe heart problems. Right.
That's it. They don't have any life-altering medical problems. They're simply depressed. A very cruel doctor, basically permitting them to euthanize themselves because they don't want to live.
Yeah.
And it's all, I mean, it's really just this depression. I mean, it's not like depression is an easy thing to go through, but when I was a kid, you hear somebody say,
yeah. In fact, I happened to see a commercial on television. Oh, yeah. No. When you introduce physician-assisted suicide, it's amazing how young some of the patients get. And you might appreciate somebody who has terminal brain cancer at 20 years old, not wanting to live through it because it is painful. But the number that are just depressed. But the commercial I saw yesterday was a group trying to deal with suicides. Well, probably 60% of all the suicides in the United States are from depression. Now, it might be depression caused by a disease, a lingering disease. But, I mean, I've known lots of, we just had Gary Sear. He had no physical problems that I knew of for sure. But he was very depressed. And he killed himself. And so just somebody wanting to die is not necessarily. It's unfortunate. I would rather put the money into trying to deal with the depression and figure out why people are depressed, because it's probably a chemical imbalance. And probably caused by modern medicine and their give me a pill to fix everything type thing.
Even in one of our most famous incidents, is the weight loss. Some of you
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, one of the biggest, I think one of the biggest causes of depression in women is postpartum depression. I mean, and when you're in that hole, it's sometimes hard to see light at the end of the tunnel. Even though most women will tell you, it was interesting, we watched the series Victoria on PBS, which I found interesting, and Diana Riggs' character, because Queen Victoria suffered postpartum depression. And, you know, Diana Riggs, it surprised me it was Diana Riggs, because I remember when she played in another film, and that old lady is Diana Riggs, but said to her, you know, you'll get over it. You just have to work your way through it. But it's hard to tell people that when they're in the midst of all of that. So I guess the point here is that we need to understand and we need to point out to people that the advantages of Christianity, even to non-Christians in the world, has been absolutely tremendous. And people just don't appreciate it. That all the good we have in the world, the care for children, the status of women, I mean, it annoys me when I hear the feminists in this country complain that they support Islam rather than America. And it's like, have you ever seen how the Islamic Republic treats women? I mean, it was a big deal that in Saudi Arabia they allowed women to drive this year. Had a progressive prince take over. But, you know. And we complain over here because women don't become partners in law firms quick enough, or you know, don't get advanced fast enough, or don't get jobs. But yet, that was another thing I saw yesterday was, I think it was like 30 or 40% of all girls are interested in STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, when they're younger, but by the time they get to college age, only like 8% are still interested in it. But then they tell me there are not enough women in engineering. Well, that's not, I mean, I didn't tell them not to go into engineering. And there were several in my engineering classes that were going into engineering. And I've known female engineers, and they're good. But it takes somebody who likes math, who likes science, who likes to tinker with stuff, to do that. And sometimes that's just not necessary. But my point is that all of this stuff that we take for granted in our world around us, in our society, all the good is from Christianity. And even the so-called atheists, here was one. Will Durant was a humanist, and he wrote in a magazine, "Moreover, we shall find it no easy task to mold a natural ethic strong enough to maintain moral restraint and social order without the support of supernatural consolations, hopes, and fears. There's no significant example in history before our time of a society successfully maintaining moral life without the aid of religion." It's interesting, Napoleon, I don't consider him a great Christian, but he said he saw men without God. He saw them in the French Revolution. He said, "One does not govern such men. He shoots them down. They have descended to the level of beasts." And if you ever want to do a comparison, and actually Ann Coulter wrote a book about this, comparing the French Revolution and the American Revolution. Both had the same aims. It was supposed to be democracy. You know. And how the French Revolution, which was anti-Christ, anti-God, and the American Revolution, which was basically pushed by the Presbyterians and the pastors, the difference was in America, when the revolution was over, how many Tories did we execute? And there were probably 40% of people in the colonies at the time were Tories that supported the British government. We didn't execute anybody. There might have been a few towns that chased them out and made them go to Canada, but they didn't kill them. In the French Revolution, they killed millions of people who were royalists. For no other reason than they were royalists. And to show you how dumb they were, even the man who, Robespierre, who pushed the Reign of Terror, ended up getting his own head cut off. Because they got to the point where they didn't like him anymore. So get rid of him. But, yeah, the other thing about this is the first thing that all of this does, including starting with Darwin, is it devalues human life. And so, in fact, Stalin once said, one person dying is a tragedy. 100 million is a statistic. And let's face it, we tend to look at it that way. We, you know, oh, it's horrible that our neighbor died in Iraq or Afghanistan, or, you know, or that we just had a neighbor woman who was in her 80s die here this week. You know, that's horrible. But we read online of thousands of people dying overseas, and it's like, okay. I mean, here's what the evolutionists have said about this. A mere insect, an ant, this is about humans, a fungus on the surface of one of the minor planets, a rope stretched over an abyss, a small potatoes and few, a jest, a dream, a show, a bubble. So if you have this idea of what humanity is, you know, why do you care? They die. In fact, if you ask the question, what is a human? What is a human? What do you see as a human? How do you define it? That's right. Yeah, the Westminster Catechism, this isn't verbatim, it's a being created by God, male and female, after his own image, in the knowledge, righteousness, and holiness, with dominion over the creatures. That's the Christian view and the Jewish view of a human. Or you can say he's a complex animal related to the anthropoids, which emerged from the primordial slime, entered existence through a chance concatenation of molecules and amino acids. And in that case, who cares if you kill a slime? Or as Sproul once said, you know, who cares if one cosmic accident kills another cosmic accident? What difference does it make? And that's what the atheist world is leading us to. And if you don't believe that, just watch some of their movies, because they point exactly to that. The Proverbs talks a lot about fools, and fools, even when they're confronted with the evidence of what's going on around them, don't seem to take any notice. Or like Einstein said, you know, they keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, and that's insanity. All right, any other comments? And the important thing is that the world would be an entirely different place and totally unrecognizable, if it even still existed, if Christ hadn't been born. Probably if God had not chosen to send Christ, he would have destroyed the world by now anyway. All right, let me close this in prayer. Heavenly Father, we do thank you and praise you for your blessings on us, for your word, and for all the ways in which you have guided us and protected us. We pray now that you would bless us as we go into our worship service, that in all things we would worship you and praise you and glorify you, and all this we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.